Thank you. The other thing that concerns us is that, as I think you said and other people again, we don't understand why the police union gets to decide policy issues. I'm an urban transportation planner, and if I came in for a job with the city, I said, well, before I accept this job, I want to negotiate level of service for roadways. I think all of our streets should be B. You would look at me like I was crazy. Why am I negotiating a public policy and best practices issue? That seems to be exactly what you're doing with the police. Now, we have a series of issues with the immediate policy, and then I'm going to spend a minute telling you, or actually probably less than a minute, telling you why I think the whole process has really been done very poorly and the city has failed the public. So these are the things that we don't like in the current policy. CERT is not required to use body cams. And they're the people, they're the officers who are most likely to conduct, to have something violent or untoward happen. Cops don't have to video mere conversations, even if frisking is involved. Cops can take advantage of sex crime victims, but interviews won't be taped. We have two Portland police officers who did, in fact, take advantage of sex crime victims, and we would have no record of that. The cops don't have to remind people of the right to remain silent. And you also seem to forget that state laws will cause faces to be blurred. Overall, it seems that these policies focus more on prosecuting civilians over holding cops accountable. And that's not surprising because you negotiated with police officers and their union. However, I want to talk a little about this process. I went to a couple of those forums. First off, they were very poorly attended. And secondly, well-intentioned or not, the police officers walked in and said, so what do you think we should do? Most people don't think about cop cam policy. What the city had a responsibility to do and failed was to conduct a best practices survey, to look at what other cities were doing and then come to the public and say, these are the best practices. These are some of the things we like. What do you guys think? That's where the forum should have started. It's like coming in. You know, you're going to see your doctor, and your doctor says, I'm sorry, we're going to have to conduct surgery. Why don't you tell me what you think we should operate on? I mean, give me a break. Anyhow, in summary, because I have 7 seconds, put the contract on a hold, allow the mayor to bargain, and create better policies with better public input.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next three are Gary Marshke, Charles Johnson, and Robert West.
Okay.
And they'll be followed by Joe Walsh, Lightning Watchdog PDX, and Jamal Williams.
Okay. Just a process check here, verify this, I'll let these folks speak, but because we're going to lose a quorum at 11:30, we're going to need to reconvene at some point. It sounds like we can reconvene earlier than 2 o'clock at 1:30. According to people's offices here. So we'll be taking a recess from 11 to 1:30. Welcome, whoever's first.
Morning, commissioners. My name is Gary Marshke, and I'm here because the power of privilege is once again being used by this body to silence the voice of the majority. And in this case, they also happen to be the voices of those significantly underrepresented and clearly not as privileged. I'm speaking to the new police union contract and all that it represents. Additional millions are being paid out to the perpetrators of the culture of oppression and violence. Meanwhile, police oversight committees are being disbanded. Staff support for efforts to support community-based conversations and solutions is being eliminated. And those that want to change the system from within are once again being manipulated, marginalized, and muted. We often wonder why people want to destroy the system. Yet when they try to work within it, privilege works the system to put every conceivable obstacle in their path to ensure the status quo is maintained. That same privilege allows you, the patients, to hide behind the podium while the barbarians at the gate starve for lack of attention or resources. That same privilege allows you to remain oblivious to change. The same privilege that hears only the voices of privilege that are doing all they can to perpetuate the status quo. As I said in the beginning, I came here because the community is being silenced, purposely and systematically told their voices don't count. That's privilege in its purest sense. Privilege is preserving the most narrow and uninclusive language when developing public engagement rules and strategies. Privilege is using words that narrowly define public participation in democracy to include only like-minded and too often like-looking individuals. Privilege is practicing containment rather than collaboration. I also came here because I happen to be old enough, naive enough, and privileged enough to believe that the system can change and will work. Voices that are, I happen to believe that what our system needs is new and fresh voices to bring that new perspective into how our government should work. Voices that are empowered to make change that reflects the diverse community outside rather than the cloistered culture inside. Voices out here asking for a tidbit of some of that privilege. Currently, it seems evident that you're doing all you can to stifle those voices and resort once again to the bosom of privilege. I call on you instead to empower those voices and embrace the new perspectives rather than exclude them. Start by rejecting the contract, an obvious attempt to ignore the pleas of the community and serve the needs of privilege, and give the community, especially those most directly affected, real and independent voice to make change. You have the power and the privilege. Do the right thing and let change happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Robert West. I'm with Film the Police 911, and there's several issues I want to bring up. One is that you guys made sure that yesterday you were shut down, so we could only get these today. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is that Film the Police and people that go out and film the police are often targeted by the police. And as far as professionalism, I don't see professionalism too often. I've been spotlighted with the intent to disrupt my video. One time they had a 122nd and Division shut down, and they're allowing people to walk back and forth, a media camera set up. It was a fatal accident. I walked across the street with a crowd, and I'm the only one that got a ticket out of it. There's another guy that was with Film the Police. He was driving up the street and got pulled over, and the only thing the officer wrote him up for was not having insurance. Not having insurance is not a reason to pull someone over. You have to have a legitimate reason to stop someone. This year and last year, I'm facing 9 criminal counts for filming when I'm standing on sidewalks, when I'm standing on, one time I was standing on a divider. I've seen the police go in and lie in my case. I've seen them go in and lie in Tressa Rayford's case. And you're going to sit there and give these officers a pay raise and say, good job, you know. They're sitting there committing crimes. Lying in court is perjury, you know. But in the Multnomah County, they don't care about perjury. As long as the officer goes in and says, it doesn't matter if it's true or correct or what. And that's a shame. And I would sit there and say, no, these officers don't deserve a pay raise. They don't deserve these extra privileges. I don't see the teacher's contract, but I know they don't have such a nice contract, and they're having to deal with kids all day. So they say, oh, the police are in a dangerous situation. Firefighters are in their line of duty, when they're out doing what they're supposed to be doing, are in more danger than a police officer. A police officer may pull his gun once a month, once a year. A firefighter goes into a burning house once every couple of days. And inside a burning house, anything can happen. Walls can fall. They can trip over stuff and get hurt because they don't see it. And so to sit there and say that these officers are risking their lives, they're not. I've seen way too many times that they've brought in a whole bunch of officers when they didn't need them.
Thank you very much. Mr. Johnson, I think you get the last word for this morning, and then we're going to take a break.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson. And I don't know if he was helped by his phone while he was looking at it, but Steve Novick made one of the most insightful comments here. Crimes, down, 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 way down. That's why the police are finding busy work, like sending 20 officers to respond at Old Chicago Pizza at 102nd and Burnside, when all people have done is tease them in front of their office. That's where you get massive police response. That's why we have so much resources that we can pay or let Apple or Target pay for city police cars to sit idle next to the Apple store and next to the Target store where they don't need to be. So the other problem is more a complicated dynamic, and it's the way that you need to ask yourselves, if you are a bunch of mafioso dons, you shake down the taxpayers to finance your brutal thugs. When you when the previous city council murdered James Chassis through the police department, you extorted millions of dollars from taxpayers to cover up the police brutality. Well, not to cover it up, it was very obvious, to keep paying his murderers. Now, some of his murderers have left the police department. And, of course, this doesn't just apply to James Chassis. It applies to Kendra James. It applies to Keaton Otis. It applies to way too many people. So when we look at this 74-page PDF of a police contract, we don't see any change in the mafioso thug function of the Portland City Council of just transferring money to misbehaving police officers and extorting money out of taxpayers to cover up for mistakes that came from oversight that never, I can't say never gets any better. We're having a good period. I don't know how long. I hope Dan Handelman's here, and later we can find out how long it's been, if the police have killed anybody, since they killed Michael Johnson, a man in mental distress, near a hospital. We have that's a proud tradition in Portland. Go to Adventist Hospital without a gun, have a phone in your hand, get killed. Go to Good Sam Hospital, now that person, at least a Good Sam, Mr. Johnson, was armed. But if we're going to pay the police $10 million or $6 million more, we want to be buying police thugs that are at least less violent, that are use their non-lethal weapons 100% of the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, folks. So we're gonna recess until 1:30, and then folks that have signed up will get a first chance to speak then. Thank you all. We'll recess till 1:30.